Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome to Screen Geeks Radio, episode 15. This is Dave.
This is Barry.
And joining us, especially in the studio, is my wife.
Hi.
This is Stephanie. And joining us via Skype with a better connection, sorry, Billy Flynn, we have the Vicar.
Yay, Vicar!
Well, thank you, gentlemen and lady, joining especially for this episode as well. Thank you for having me on from the crosstown studios of Geek Label Radio. I'm glad to come and join you. Howdy.
Yes, very cool. Oh, and everything even sounds better than last time.
All right.
It's always good to check that. This week we are talking costume dramas. We were in a bit of a hiatus, if you will, due to some real life. Yeah.
But we are back. We are back for all the people who have been wanting us to come back. We are back for Ethan. We are back for Aaron. We are back for that little girl in Kazakhstan who's been accidentally downloading our episodes. Thank you. We are back for you.
But no Slovenia.
You only have one person in the Far East who is downloading you? Because, yeah, we're huge in Slovenia, as you know. So you guys need a little bit of that, like, Estonian action or Latveria. You ever been to Latveria? Good people over there.
Man. Except for the dude with the giant metal mask, you know, besides that.
Oppressive or whatever, but besides that, they're good folks.
Exactly. Cool. All right. Well, let's go ahead and talk about what's coming out this week and get the show on the road.
This week in theaters, we had 30 Days of Night starring Josh Hartnett and a whole lot of Alaskan vampires, a parody of sports films, The Comeback starring Carl Weathers, why, Ben Affleck's directorial debut, Gone Baby Gone, starring little brother Casey, Rendition starring Reese Witherspoon and Jake Gyllenhaal, are they or aren't they? We just don't know. Sarah Langdon in The Paranormal Hour, most original film of the year. Things Lost in the Fire with Halle Berry and Benicio Del Toro. The Ten Commandments in animated form starring Christian Slater and Ben Kingsley. Definitely the Are You Kidding movie of the week. And finally, coming back, apparently an annual treat, The Nightmare Before Christmas in 3D. Now, I've heard 30 Days of Night is 90 minutes of crap. Have you seen it, Vicar?
I have not seen it. It's in my game plan to see this week. But okay. Just last night, while I was shaking my groove thing at my favorite little club here in Richmond, I was talking to one of my forum users, one of my buddies who had just gone and seen it. And he said it was fine if you know what you're going into. It's a gory vampire movie, and if you like that, fine. But if you're a fan of the books, if you've read the graphic novels and enjoyed the graphic novels, you will enjoy the film a great deal less.
Mm. Ouch.
So, okay. Yeah. Take that for what it's worth. He said they boiled down a lot, which you do with adaptations, I guess. A lot of the salient points from the books were taken out, a lot of the finer points and the nuances were taken out, and it was just a bit more in your face and a bit more gory and a bit less interesting than the book. That's what I heard.
So another lowered expectations comic book adaptation. Great.
It's Josh Hartnett. How high were your expectations in the first place?
You've got a point there.
He also said Josh sucked. Yes, that is true.
And so it's,
that's
it's
a shocker.
Sort of
like,
30 Days of Night with Yui Bull behind the helming.
Oof.
Yeah.
Okay, then.
All right.
Ouch. I know you got to see...
I saw Dan in real life because they had a major sneak preview this week. And I guess I shouldn't talk about it too much, more like next week. But I got to say, I was not all that crazy about it. But everyone who I saw it with was over the moon in love with it. So I'm the odd man out here.
Oh, that was the first movie you saw. You guys also got to go see Nightmare.
I did see Nightmare in 3D, yeah. And I really, really enjoyed it. I got to say, though, for those who have said that it's not necessarily a movie that needs to be in 3D, I do agree. Other than two numbers, it's perfectly fine as a 2D movie. And it's certainly, just it's such a treat to see that film on the big screen because it's so detailed and there's so much you miss. And it's such a brilliant and thrilling movie. It was the first time I'd seen it on the big screen since the day it opened. So that was fun.
And
are you guys going to be horrified if I tell you that I've never seen this picture?
No.
No.
Okay.
But you should
Flynn
see it.
Will be horrified if I tell him that.
you should see it, though. It's a great film. Four stars all the way. Great movie.
And while I'm not the biggest fan of it, as I've said on previous shows that we were involved with. No. It is kind of like a shoebox diorama, as if it was set on a stage play. It's just stuff opposed to stuff popping out, which I have to say, you said the movie is very detailed. It really draws a lot of attention to that detail, which I thought was very cool. So if you're a huge fan of Nightmare, go check it out. Apparently every Halloween.
Definitely.
Yeah, I think that's about it. What's hitting DVD this week?
DVD, we got one of the best films of the year, the underrated cult classic to be Fido. A very sweet sleeper of a surprise, the Disney film Meet the Robinsons. Kristen Bell in the third season of Veronica Mars. Hostel, part 2. Young Indiana Jones Chronicles, Volume 1, finally released by the good people at Lucasfilm. The sleeper, soon-to-be cult hit of the year, Mr. Brooks with Kevin Costner, and the good people from Criterion are releasing Mondo special editions of Terrence Malick's Days of Heaven and Jean-Luc Godard's Breathless.
Exactly.
So let's talk about everything before Fido. Young Indiana Jones, they're finally releasing it.
And I got to say, the one episode that everybody needs to see, not because it's a great episode, but because it's such a curiosity item, is The Legend of the Jazz, or like the secret of anyway, the Jazz episode that Harrison Ford reappears in as Indiana Jones.
Interesting.
Because he shot it he has a cameo in the episode, and he shot it while he was doing The Fugitive. So he's got this total beard thing going on. And it's completely cheesy. It's kind of like the Indiana Jones holiday special in that sense. But still, for Indiana Jones completist, you got to see that episode.
Did you watch this back in the day, Vicar?
I'm sorry, did I watch what?
Did you watch Young Indiana Jones back in the day?
Oh, did I watch it in the day? You know, I didn't. I missed that, too. I mean, I saw all the movies, and I saw the Star Wars holiday special, so I'm able to sort of put them together and imagine what it would be like if B. Arthur played round fat ass or whatever the hell the kids do. I could see that. That'd be fun. What was his name? Round ass? Round?
Short round.
Short round.
Short round. Yeah. There we go. B. Arthur could be short round. round, something. I don't
or know. Art Carney, you know, whichever.
There we go.
Yeah, you know, it wasn't a bad show. I think with lowered expectations, because I remember like the pilot episode like put me to sleep. It's like where's all the action? It really was like a travelogue at times. But the show did eventually find its rhythm, and Sean Patrick Flannery was a really good young Indiana Jones. Definitely, you know, certainly, you know, filling in for River Phoenix quite nicely. But not a bad show at all, and I'm glad that it's finally seen the light of day.
Exactly, and you got the finale to Veronica Mars, which that's right. Big fan of that show, so good it's show. All good. And then we have Fido.
Yes,
Fido is. I'm telling you, it's zeroing in on number one on my list for the year.
It's such a wonderful, wonderful film. This is the Tim Burton movie he forgot that he did. It is such a charming, sweet, gory, funny as all heck zombie movie.
Anytime you can say endearing zombie movie, it bears mentioning.
Yes, I think.
Remember, you guys have been talking about this movie for a while. Throughout the year, you guys have been talking about these pictures, mm-hmm. So it's piqued my interest. Oh, speaking of which, and I'm sorry, I won't derail the show anymore after this.
Oh, no, it's okay. Go for it.
Speaking of stuff that I picked up purely on your recommendation, I twisted my special antenna this weekend in order to bring in Black Sheep. Purely.
How was
it? I seem to remember you guys mentioned it. I haven't watched it yet. I just downloaded it. I mean, acquired it. But I seem to remember you guys talking about it at some point this year.
We wanted to see it. We haven't seen it yet.
It never came to Colorado, so yeah, we're dying to see it.
Well, I haven't either, so I will let you know, sir. I will let you know after I've watched this fine sheep horror movie. Carry on.
Well, since you've already derailed it, I have also used said special antenna to finally see Sunshine just for Ethan. That was a really interesting movie. It's a sci-fi movie. The sun's going out, like it's starting to die, so they're going to send essentially a giant nuclear bomb the size of Manhattan to go try to reignite the sun. And
that makes sense.
It's really interesting. I'm very torn about how I feel about the ending, and that's all I'll say.
Mm.
But yes, I look forward to talking to Ethan about this, because very interesting times. So, cool.
So how does the Jewish family fit into this, the generations of them who all look like Ralph Fiennes? How does that fold into this? Because I thought I saw this, and I don't remember the Manhattan nuclear bomb.
Oh, my gosh. Wow, you really reached into your film geek library there. Yeah, Sunshine, for the two people who got that reference, is a three-hour Hungarian epic with Ralph Fiennes and I think Rachel Weisz is in that. Holy crap.
Rachel Weisz is in it, and it's terrible, and it shouldn't be terrible.
But it's got great sword fight scenes. I remember that. He's a dueler, so he's got these scenes where he takes on these young duelers. I thought that was like the cool part of this 3-hour Hungarian epic.
Yeah, those 17 combined minutes were the cool part of that 3-hour opus of crap. You're right.
Ouch. But hey, I'm impressed you remember Sunshine. I think you and me are like the only people in America who saw Sunshine.
Oh, rock on! We're Sunshine Brothers.
That's right, man. Sunshine for life.
Wow.
Oh, hells yeah, we're bringing it back. Taking
bringing
it back.
Something back.
All right. Oh, that hurt. Let's move on to news while we still can.
Yes.
Because it's a bunch of crap. Well, I don't know. Remaking a Van Damme movie, how bad can it go?
Well, apparently the good people at Dark Horse decided there needs to be another Time Cop. So, yeah, get ready for Time Cop rebooted or regurgitated or re-something sometime next year.
I don't even know what to say about that.
Yeah, it's kind of a shocker.
That's all that I had, so... That just hurt my brain far too much.
Well, you know, this is going to make your head explode, Dave. Probably the sad remake news, I think, it would have to be of the year. It's a rumor, but apparently there's a lot of people saying this is indeed fact. The Karate Kid, I've always been fearing they're going to remake it. Not only are they remaking the original Karate Kid, but apparently it's going to star 9-year-old Jaden Smith. That's Will Smith's son.
No.
Wow.
Yeah.
If they get Sonny Chiba to play Mr. Miyagi, maybe.
They'll probably get Chow Yun-Fat or Jet Li to play Mr. Miyagi with heavy old-age makeup, while Daniel LaRusso probably be, what, Daniel Jones? Yeah.
Leroy Jenkins? You know, whichever.
Yeah, it's going to be...
I was going to joke and say, ooh, it's going to be like Little Romeo, isn't it? And holy crap, we're not that far off. That kind of sucks.
You see, that's why you need to be working at a studio, because like, you'd be like, oh yeah, man, they'd be rolling with those ideas.
That no,
oh, they would love me.
Stay away, Jade. The kid was good in Pursuit of Happiness, but
yeah. I wouldn't call him an actor though. I think, you know, very capable young guy, but
well, and part of the whole point of Karate Kid was that the kid was like, you know, he was at 16, 17,
right?
Yeah. Well past the age of when he should be able to learn karate.
Yeah, now it's going to be like Mike with karate. Yeah.
See, they got in Zac Efron. I'm sorry, no,
Zac Efron. My bad. Well, that I think that would be a step up, honestly. Because Zac Efron was charming in Hairspray. I can't say that little Jaden Smith can carry a movie, despite who his very charismatic father is. So.
Oh, John Travolta as Miyagi. Oh, sweet. Put him up with the eyes and you know, wax on and all. He could do that.
Because Mickey Rooney's too old or what?
Ooh, Mickey Rooney as Miyagi. Wow.
Sorry, I just had to throw the Breakfast Tiffany's thing in there for you.
Yeah. The little Asian Mickey Rooney. Oh, when was the little Asian? Didn't he play a little Asian at some point?
Yeah, in Breakfast at Tiffany's.
Breakfast at Tiffany's. All right, thank you. Took me a minute to get the joke. Sorry, joke grenade.
It's all good. 5 seconds. It's all good. Have you got anything else?
You ever see Mickey Rooney? You ever run into him at conventions?
I know that you had an experience with him.
I have, yeah. I've run into him a couple of times at cons. I have no clue, incidentally, why Mickey Rooney is at Dragon Con. I think he just wandered in and they were scared to say anything to him or whatnot, you know. So it's just him and his little pack of Depends, and he's sitting there looking shell-shocked. And nobody really knows why he's there, but it's Mickey frickin' Rooney, so nobody's going to tell him to leave. I'm not even sure he's there. I think his handlers just bring him in and they collect the money from anybody that comes and pays for pictures. And then they drag him out or they deflate him, put him back in the box and take him to the next con. It's creepy. It's very, very creepy. Yeah, next time you see him at a con, poke him with a stick. See if it hurts him. Bet it doesn't. I'm just saying.
Wow. And how close were you last time that you saw him, I think?
Oh, so close I could smack him upside his head.
Okay.
And I wish I had, because that's a story.
There you go. Wow. Yeah.
I don't know where that came from. Continue.
It's all good.
Well, in the remake news, it continues and it gets worse and worse. Rogue Pictures is officially remaking Near Dark, the Catherine Bigelow vampire cult classic. David Cronenberg's The Brood is being remade by Spyglass Entertainment. That's sad. What else we got? And my favorite slasher film of all time, April Fool's Day. I love that movie. It's being remade. It's being filmed right now in South Carolina. And Scout Taylor Compton, who played Laurie Strode in Rob Zombie's Halloween, is headlining it. I think this is my punishment for telling people I liked Halloween. Now Scout Taylor Compton is taking over for Deborah Foreman, the queen of 80s B-movies, in a remake of April Fool's Day, which just ruins my day.
Sorry, man.
She was cute. You know, like the cute, plucky little person in Halloween couldn't act for a lick.
No. Very cute, but yeah.
That's
no.
What you get.
That's what I get. Ugh, so sad. And Fast and the Furious 4 has been greenlit, and apparently Universal is paying Vin Diesel and Paul Walker a lot of money, and they will be returning.
So what, they got paid minimum wage? They got nothing else better to do.
It was either this or the Home Shopping Network, so. Wow. Yeah.
Those movies make fat bank, though.
Yeah, even Tokyo Drift made about $70 million, and it was terrible.
And it still made plenty of money, so they're going to keep making them.
Yeah.
If only they wouldn't. All right.
Are they going to come up with newer and more creative names like Tokyo Drift?
Yeah.
Which meant nothing until you saw the movie. It's going to be Fast and the Furious, Old Chevelle, or Old Chevette.
I was going to say Talladega Skidmark, but...
Ooh, I like that. That's good, too.
That's excellent, Dave. I hope Universal is listening.
That could be funny if they did that seriously. Oh, come on, they made the comebacks. Come on.
This is true. This is true. All right, and the titles for Terminator 4 and Wolverine have been announced. Terminator Salvation, making it sound like a religious film. And then probably one of the odder ones, X-Men Origins Wolverine. That is the official title.
Ew. No, I don't like that.
Yeah, well my glorious geeky wife brought up that's the name of the comic book too. So I'm wondering if they're going to actually try to adapt that storyline or not.
Mm.
I'm not pleased with that.
Wasn't all that great of a storyline.
Oh, okay. What passes for a storyline?
Yeah.
So okay.
All right, the last one I got, and this is actually really cool. Richard Kelly has announced his new movie, and unfortunately, it's not this script that everybody's been talking about, the one about the time capsule, where this student digs up this time capsule, and turns out it's like a series of pictures of all these major disasters that have happened over time, including 9/11 and a number of others that have not happened. So this student has to like race against time to avoid all these different future catastrophes from occurring. This is his much highly touted screenplay that he wrote directly after Donnie Darko. Unfortunately, this is not Kelly's new movie. What he is doing instead is an adaptation of Richard Matheson's short story, Button, Button. This was made into an episode of The Twilight Zone. Not the original Twilight Zone, but the new Twilight Zone that came out in the 80s. The story, Button, Button, is about this trailer trash couple. They get this box in the mail. They open it, and it's basically this wooden box with a button on it. You have to hit the button, and you get $20,000 instantaneously sent to you. The catch is that somebody who you don't know will randomly die. Yeah.
Sounds like Richard Kelly.
Yeah, yeah. So it'd be interesting to see what he does with this.
Cool.
So.
All right, cool. Well, let's take a quick break, and we will be right back.
This is Ray.
Sup?
Let's listen in as Ray hits on Sandra.
Excuse me, miss, but do you know karate? Because your body is kicking.
Ooh. Now, let's listen to the same scene. Only this time, Ray is sporting a quality Geek Label t-shirt.
Yo, baby, I was wondering,
Damn.
Rejection.
What's up with that?
We can't really stop it.
Damn.
But we can outfit you in buttery smooth designs for geeks, gamers, and tech heads. They're custom t-shirts. They're not magic t-shirts.
Damn.
Another fine product from geeklabel.com.
And we're back, and we're going to talk about our topic this week, which is costume dramas. Now, this could be any essential genre that is just costume rich, and you could even say the costumes themselves play a character in the story, which is obviously why we brought Dave's wife Stephanie to bring a certain perspective into this deep conversation, because really this encapsulates a lot of different movies and a lot of different genres.
And why we brought in the Victor, because you are quite the historical nut, sir.
Yes.
Oh, is that why you brought me in for this?
Well, that and your co-guy, so.
Okay, well, no, see, I was thinking, and my co-hosts actually thought that it was just because I admittedly love chick movies, and I particularly love chick costume dramas. I'm a sucker for that stuff. I'm a big, fat girl when those things come out.
Fair enough.
No, that's my point.
I guess I didn't need to admit that, but now I've done it, so it's out there. I like the way you put it. Yes, because I'm a historian, that's why I'm here.
Come on, didn't you just finish teaching a class on something? I forget.
Yeah, I did. I just got finished teaching a Civil War class. Let me ask you guys this, the costume drama thing, because the Kingfish asked me this a little while ago. What era, what's the cutoff for it to no longer be a costume drama? I mean, if it's set in the 60s and they're wearing period clothing, is that still a costume drama?
I've been asking that all week.
Yeah. I think, generally speaking, it tends to lean more Victorian.
Yeah, I don't think I would call, like, The Wedding Singer a costume drama.
Wow.
Although, it certainly had, you know, costumes.
Well, it's not a drama.
Yeah.
Have to go with JFK.
Yeah, I wouldn't say that's
right,
a costume drama.
Right, that was set in the 60s, or, anyway.
Yeah, probably
right. So as long as we're... Cutoff is around 1900.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. I'm ready. I'm good.
Cool. Ready to wing it.
I'm prepared to talk.
Okay, well, I mean, let's just address the ones that Stephanie brought literally with her to the table. This is
brought
great.
Up from the basement.
Like, I didn't have to do any prep or anything. Like, here it is. We got Gone with the Wind, the great Margaret Rich Mitchell Civil War story. We've got Sofia Coppola's Marie Antoinette, the cult classic and a hit movie, I might add, the Drew Barrymore take on Cinderella Ever After, Emma. I mean, you basically go with any Jane Austen drama there. And what else you got?
Pride and Prejudice.
Pride and Prejudice.
Vanity Fair.
Vanity Fair. Yeah, and some of these movies have some of the most beautiful costume design in the last few years, particularly Vanity Fair and Marie Antoinette. Gorgeous movies to look at, even if you just turn the sound off.
There you go.
Oh, my God. I have seen pretty much every one of these films, and I'm ashamed to say that. My wife actually looks at me sometimes, shakes her head, and says, would it kill you to watch ESPN every now and again? Oh, well.
Did you mention Dangerous Liaisons?
Well, I didn't mention it, but I've got it here.
That's up on the list, too, so yeah.
Yeah, and that's another Oscar winner for Best Costume Design. Gorgeous, gorgeous costumes in that movie.
So let's bring the question into play. What makes a good costume drama? Is it just the costumes?
I think it's when they play a character in the movie, honestly. They just completely convey the time and the place, and they completely just help seal the fact that this is a costume drama. I mean, one of the problems I had with Elizabeth the Golden Age, and, you know, this is definitely the reason why this came up, this topic, was that even though the costumes are beautiful and the movie is beautifully made, I can never forget that I was watching a costume drama because the dialogue and the performances, to me, felt so modern, and the story was obviously meant to be a parable as to the world that we live in now. There's all sorts of Iraq and religious fun fundamental references. I couldn't forget that I was watching a costume drama, and that's Clive Owen in a costume and Kate Blanchett and Samantha Morton in costume. And as beautiful as the costume design is, I couldn't forget that I was watching a movie, unlike Marie Antoinette or Dangerous Liaisons, where I'm looking at the movie and it's like I almost feel like I'm looking through a time machine and I'm looking at the way the time really was.
Now, how did you feel about the first Elizabeth?
I loved the first Elizabeth. Loved it.
Okay. So this one suffers by comparison. I haven't seen it yet. I'm dying to, but I haven't seen it.
I thought the first one was a genuinely exciting movie, and this one I thought it was just really, really dull. And even its big moments, it felt so cinematic. I can never forget that I was watching a movie, and at times it was so overly stylized. It was like watching a music video.
Well, it was very flat, but I think that was as much a problem with the writing as it was the costumes.
Sure.
Or the picture itself.
Yeah.
Well, and I think Kate Blanchett really, I thought she was great in it.
She was, yeah.
And that's probably why I enjoyed it so much. We walked out and Stephanie said, I'm really surprised you like this movie so much. Because it really isn't my cup of tea for the most part.
Yeah.
But she just really was riveting in every scene she was in. So that's probably why I enjoyed it as much as I did.
Well, she's wonderful. That's Kate Blanchett.
Yeah.
I don't think she can do a bad picture. I'll take that back because probably she has. But
yeah,
I don't
Notes on a Scandal. Yeah.
Yeah, well, she was... No, go ahead.
I love Notes on a Scandal.
Really?
I loved it. I think it's one of the best scripts of 06. I think it's, but anyway, I think that a good costume drama is like lightning in a bottle. It is damned hard to make a good picture without it looking like bad high school drama. It's hard to pull off once. You sure as hell aren't going to pull it off twice,
yeah.
Which is why you don't see that many sequels. Major exceptions, if you consider Lion and Winter to be a sequel of sorts to Beckett because you've got Peter O'Toole reprising the role, then that's an example. Barring that, not much. It's a good thing they didn't do the Gone with the Wind sequel except as a TV movie because you're not going to recapture that. So I was afraid of that with Elizabeth Golden Age. I'm sorry to hear you say that it's not good or not as good.
Well, I think one of the problems with the dialogue is that it was so knowing, and it was one of these deals where, like, for example, Kate Blanchett, as Elizabeth, has a line where she says, you know, did we discover the new world, or did the new world discover us? And I'm thinking, Bob Dylan could pull off this line, you know. Did we discover the new world, did the new world discover us, you know.
It's really scary since she's playing Bob Dylan.
Exactly, yeah.
Never mind.
Do-do-do-do. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Okay, you had a few interesting picks on your list, Barry.
My favorite costume drama, I know this is really, really pushing it, but to me the costumes are such a pivotal reason why the movie works, and it's one of my favorite costume films of all time, is Bram Stoker's Dracula. The costumes won an Oscar, and I think they're just so gorgeous and so over the top and gaudy and outrageous, and I think they just create such a character unto themselves. Although I really wouldn't call that a historical film, but still.
Fair enough.
Well, that's all right. We're not talking historical films. We're talking costume dramas, yes, right? So I guess you could put that in there.
Mm-hmm. And if you're going down that lane, you almost have to mention Interview with the Vampire, too.
Sure.
I know,
sure.
Granted, a lot of it's set in current times, but there's quite a few Victorian, early American scenes in it that really, they worked hard to pull off as if they were in that time, as opposed to, you know, like what you ran into in like First Night, where you have Richard Gere being a 90s guy in Camelot.
Oh, God.
You know.
Yeah, that and Lady Hawk, two examples of absolutely horrific, barbaric treatment of the look they should have gone with.
Yeah,
Interview is a gorgeous picture, but you expect that from everybody involved there. I guess my list is a little more traditional stuff. You mentioned Jane Austen because I love those. I love the Keira Knightley recent retake with Donald Sutherland. Pride and Prejudice.
Mm-hmm.
Pride and Prejudice was great. I loved it. I loved that they were all – they didn't look quite so clean. You know what I mean? You've seen this.
Well, that's a lot of the problems with a lot of costume dramas is they focus so much on looking pretty that they don't look real. And so you almost get two different kinds of costume dramas, ones that are meant to be pretty, and then the ones that are supposed to be a little more historically accurate.
Yeah.
And there's beauty in that film. The costumes are pretty. The set design is pretty. But I think it's a little more realistic. The nighttime scenes are damn dark and dim, which is more accurate. And everybody's always got a little sheen of sweat. You notice that when you watch that picture? And I like that because that's accurate. Those are all good. I loved Emma. You mentioned Emma, which was magnificent. It's hard to F up a Jane Austen novel. You can do it, but it's hard.
Yeah.
And then the E.M. Forster stuff. Howard's End is 1920s, so that may be pushing our time frame. I don't know. But Howard's End is one of those examples of a great costume drama to me, wherein the costumes are actually something you hardly even notice. It is so organic. You're not looking and going, oh, look, that's Anthony Hopkins, because he melts into the scenery and the costume and the setting, and it all just becomes a huge character. And so it's just magnificent.
And you have the Jane Austen stuff, and another one that you have to bring up the Shakespearean films. My wife just recently had me watch Merchant of Venice.
Oh, the Pacino?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
Yes. And the costumes really sold that film, and I thought it was. I really, I'm not a big Shakespearean film guy, but I dug the crap out of that movie. I think it was part of it was just the chemistry with Daniel Day-Lewis and how they literally had a love-hate relationship going on. So
Well, Vicar, you mentioned, James Ivory, so I got to jump on that. I mean, anything that guy does is beautiful. Even going back to like the Bostonians and, even a few years ago with the Surviving Picasso, his movies, I swear the costumes are so pivotal in creating that time period, and they do it so effortlessly. It's beautiful films.
The costuming, the set design, all of it is seamless, and it all dovetails together. You don't see the seams. I already said that. Anyway, just becomes a character.
Yeah,
absolutely wonderful. Remains of the Day, one of my favorite films. But then you're also looking at a World War II picture, so you may be pushing the envelope for our time frame here. But wonderful, gorgeous. A very rare example when I think the film was far superior to the book. The Remains of the Day was a wee little book, little 120-page book, which just didn't do that much for me. And I think the film had a hell of a lot more depth than the book did. And a lot of that is, of course, those guys. Is James Ivory and the late... No, wait. Which one just died?
It was... I think Ivory is still with us, isn't he? And isn't it Merchant who passed away?
So Ismail Merchant. I couldn't remember which one had died. Okay.
Yeah. No, you're so right about Remains of the Day, too, because... like the Bostonians was one of the first post Superman Christopher Reeve roles that he had, and it's the movie is beautiful, but his performance is a disaster in that film. Unlike Remains of the Day, where he is perfect in that film.
Yeah. Hey, let's talk about costume dramas and Chris Reeve. When I was a teenager, when I was a young and romantic lad, a teenager, I thoroughly enjoyed and loved Somewhere in Time.
Yeah,
and
I was waiting for someone to bring that up.
Absolutely unwatchable, if not downright laughable now. And I love Jane Seymour. She makes me happy in pants, but it's just utterly unwatchable.
I had a very similar experience. I remember loving this film as a kid, and I told Stephanie, we have to watch Somewhere in Time. This is such a good movie.
I had the same experience with my wife. I'm like, this is the most romantic movie of all time. You'll love it. When I saw it in the 80s and watching it in 2003, it did not go over very well at all.
Yeah, you're just like, holy crap. Did he actually just deliver that line?
It's just horrible. So corny.
It's horrible.
And the penny.
If you're drinking, it's still fun.
And the penny that sends him back in time. Like, oh, so cornball.
Yeah, bad stuff.
You mentioned Lady Hawk. I have to say, in that case, I think it was the soundtrack that hurt the movie more than the costumes.
God, yes.
Yeah.
Just had to throw that out there.
The costuming was not as bad, but it's still plenty bad. It was still very, just modern. The helmets. You think about Navarre's helmet, and it doesn't look like anything historical. It's based on absolutely nothing. It's altogether fanciful, which stands out like a sore thumb, just like the music does in a picture that's set when it is. Otherwise, I like what they tried to do with that.
Yeah,
definitely.
Lady Hawk is one I can still watch.
Yeah, if they did like an isolated without the music score, I could watch it almost endlessly.
Yeah, where else can you see Matthew Broderick, Rutger Hauer, Michelle Pfeiffer in the same movie? It's great.
True.
To take it in a different direction, one of my favorites is Bernardo Bertolucci's The Last Emperor. Absolutely exquisite, beautiful, gorgeous, gorgeous movie and gorgeous costumes throughout that film. Love that movie.
You could also
I saw it years ago, and I remember almost nothing about it.
You got to see it again, man. It's 20 years old this year. Yeah, it won Best Picture of 1987. Beautiful, beautiful film.
Another one you could bring up in that almost in that vein would be like Anna and the King.
Oh, sure. Anna and the King, Memoirs of a Geisha. Yeah.
Very much. You know, again, the costumes come into play. Here's the nagging question that I'll get to. What is it about a costume drama that tends to make it skew more towards a female demographic than a male demographic? I'll put it that way. Is it because it's more of a, tends to be more romantic?
Yeah, I think the majority of these are love stories, certainly.
American men go to films in order to see things blown up real good. There aren't that many explosions in most costume dramas, so there we go. Because I think I don't think men swarmed to go see music and lyrics either, and that wasn't a costume drama. They just weren't interested.
Yeah,
stuff wasn't blowing up.
But you
that and it's kind of gay as a maypole. I like it.
I did too.
I love music and lyrics. I loved it. I go, but by and large, yeah. At least the American. I don't know about anybody else. The American male film going public. Yeah, you can look at the demographics of who goes and sees what, and it's why they're still making these.
Transformers.
Shanghai Nights movie. Transformers, there you go. Yeah.
Well, just a lot of the literature that these movies represent are a lot more sensitive than typical male fare. I mean,
sure.
Now, hold on. Wait a minute. Oh, no, you didn't. Oh, you didn't. Because I'm a sensitive 90s kind of vicar. And I enjoy these films. I enjoy walks in the rain. I enjoy going to romantic dinners. And
I did say typical.
Okay, that's fine. I'll accept your apology.
You can be the exception that proves the rule.
Okay, thank you. My wife really wishes I'd watch more ESPN. It's true. It's sad. But no, I think that's what it is. Yeah, stuff doesn't blow up. And yes, they do tend to be produced in the vein of a if not romantic comedy, at least romantic, you know, Pride and Prejudice. It's a big romantic, ends up with the prince at the end, you know, kind of. It's what makes chick movies chick movies.
Fair enough. Cool.
A Shakespeare well, in love can account here. Because Shakespeare in love is like a dramedy.
Yeah.
And a lot of the costume dramas that have come out have been from Jane Austen, and she is a woman.
Right, true.
So,
yeah, that's true. Like even
you've
in
got
the 60s,
the source material.
Yeah, like even in the 60s, like how many men do you think lined up to see Cleopatra or even Titanic for that matter?
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah,
because I think most men would consider like The Phantom Menace to be a costume drama. You know,
true.
Except for the drama, melodrama maybe. But
yeah, well, you know, although all of that political intrigue that we love the movie so much for, you know,
what.
All of them sitting around and talking in a monotone voice.
Well, Transformers, it's kind of a costume drama. They're big robots, man. Oh, brilliant. I mean, they're big robots turning into cars and then hitting other robots. I'm sorry. It gets me all emotional to think about that.
Problem?
The struggle they're going through. I'm sorry. I can't finish talking about this.
I think the last two quote-unquote costume dramas, the closest that you could get that would have really hit a cross-section of people, I think, would have been The Illusionist and The Prestige.
Sure.
Now, granted, what guy doesn't like watching magic tricks? So, I mean, you have that there by itself, but also they were just really good films.
That's actually true. Those are both relatively manly pictures. I don't know why, but, I mean, they're not.
Relative to what?
Ooh. Yeah, The Illusionist really is a love story at its heart.
Illusionist is definitely a love story. The Prestige, maybe between two men, but not... But Scarlett Johansson is not an element in that love story.
If you look at the trailer for both of these films, though, the trailers are both cut as mystery, sort of, ooh, whodunit, what's going on? Is there some magic creepiness happening? The trailers are not cut as love story.
Mm.
Absolutely.
But then you get the poster for War with Jet Li and Jason Statham, which to me makes it look like the love story of the year.
Yes, because they're 2 inches away from kissing. That's why.
Yeah. It's serious. It looks like they're about to do a serious smoochy, both of those guys.
I can't help you with that. I don't know anything about that.
Yeah, but most guys, if you're going to be talking like quote-unquote costume dramas, the closest a guy's going to get most of the time is going to be like a Western.
Right, or Braveheart or Barry Lyndon, something with good carnage.
Yeah, it all goes back to people getting limbs chopped off, stuff blowing up, horrific things happening, and men being men.
Yes. Although it doesn't always work, because really, where were the men, you know, for Kingdom of Heaven?
Okay.
You like movies with gladiators in them?
Well, I think you mentioned costumes, and most guys just kind of turn off anyway.
Yeah.
Unless it's like armor and yeah.
Well, even then, Troy and...
It's true. Alexander. Yeah, exactly.
Alexander.
Yeah. There was no audience for those movies. Yeah, you're right.
Could have just been because they were bad movies?
I think so. Probably. That's my reasoning. That's what I think.
Because if you don't want to call it a costume drama, which might turn off a male audience, a picture like that you can call historic epic or something. And then a guy will, okay, I'll go see that. Just phrase it differently. In a picture like Troy, oh, it's guys in armor hitting each other. Oh, now that's different. That's not a costume drama. That's a war movie.
Yeah. And
so
they
it all depends on how you sell it.
Exactly. They solved the problem with 300 because that movie didn't have any costumes. Everybody was running around half naked through the whole film.
There's a movie in 3D that we need to see. Only about 6 minutes of
Isn't
it.
Isn't that Beowulf?
Oh, well, there's
there
that too.
Yeah. Exactly.
Again, death, destruction, and mayhem.
That's right. Bring on the kids. Yep.
So until we get, you know, a good Jack the Ripper movie, when do you, I mean, what would it take for a costume drama to appeal to both sides of the audience, do you think? Do you think a really good, solid storyline that maybe not necessarily completely romantic could do it? Or is it just, it's a costume drama, chick flick, tune out?
I think, go ahead.
Braveheart was a good example of that.
Yeah,
that's
true.
I think that appealed to both.
That's true. It had a very strong romantic story in it as well.
Yeah, it's one of the last ones. I've always said there needs to be a really good... I mean, there have been a lot of versions of it, but there needs to be a really great Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. I think that could bring in both, because there is the love story element there, and there is the macabre element there. I've always thought that that could be a really terrific, solid movie.
You didn't love Mary Riley.
I loved elements of Mary Riley. I
did too. I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah, I think it's definitely Julia Roberts' best performance. The accent was a mess, but I think her performance in that movie was excellent. But I think, you know, the movie is problematic, especially when you consider that Malkovich was so much more frightening as Dr. Jekyll than he was as Mr. Hyde, I thought.
Cool.
Other examples. I know the movie was bad, but it made a lot of money. Pearl Harbor. Costume drama, love story, plus some war stuff getting blown up. How is that not the perfect costume drama?
That's true, and they definitely went for the female audience for that one. I think
they went. Yeah,
I think that one was just too long.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, and crappy. I think that's one of the reasons it really missed out on that Titanic money that they were blatantly going for.
It's Michael Bay.
Would actually rather eat glass than sit through it again. Never ever need to see it again.
Again, it's Michael Bay.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, when a guy knows what he can make, it's like Kenneth Branagh keeping coming out with these As You Like It's with the Shakespearean remakes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The man knows what he can do.
Mm-hmm.
Go with what works. Absolutely, yeah. Gosh, like you said, you could do a whole episode on Shakespearean adaptations. Are they costume dramas? I guess they are.
Oh,
they meet all the requirements.
Oh, yeah.
And somebody always dies in Shakespeare, as they say. Mm-hmm. So you could bring in the male audience, too. However, a Shakespeare in Love, definitely a chick picture. I don't think you got a whole lot of male demographic going in there, though I loved it. I think it's a damn near perfect film.
Yeah.
But it's half comedy, too, though. Is that a drama?
No, great film. Hey, best picture of 1998. Very
they
good
wanted
film.
The guys, they should have changed the title.
Well, that's true. Yeah. That could do a lot.
Shakespeare in War.
True. Shakespeare kicks ass. Shakespeare gets Paltrow naked.
I'd see a movie with that title.
I should name these things. That should.
Yeah, absolutely. Just shoot the titles off to your local studio reps. It's all good.
It wouldn't kill me to watch a little ESPN. I admit it. All right, Last Samurai was not but about 3 years ago. Right? 3 years ago? That's
yeah.
A good costume right there.
And you loved, didn't you just recently see American Graffiti on the big screen?
No, we ended up not going.
Oh, okay. But there's a fantastic, like one of the quintessential 50s costume dramas made in the 70s.
Okay, yes. Sure. Okay. I don't know. I think it's about time to put this one
down. We're reaching, yeah. Dude, Where's My Car? Great costume drama from the 90s.
Wow, Dazed and Confused. No.
exactly.
Well, I've got another thing.
Okay.
What about what costumes have become their own entity apart from the movie? I'm thinking of Gone with the Wind and that green dress. Everyone knows that green dress.
You know what I know that green dress from? More than the picture, which I've seen dozens of times like everybody else. But I think for a lot of people around my age is the Carol Burnett spoof. You guys remember this?
Yes.
That's what I remember is the spoof scene of it from the Carol Burnett show. It's a fun little slice of late 70s TV in America.
Nice.
But
nice.
I think that's when a costume drama or just the costume in itself becomes something bigger than the picture, when you're starting to get spoofs of it and you see it elsewhere. And
very true.
Absolutely. I mean, being a guy, when you said it, the first thing I thought of was the suit in RoboCop, but I don't think it really applies to this conversation.
Although you bring up comedy, there are some really good costume drama comedies. Two of them that come to mind would be The Importance of Being Earnest and An Ideal Husband.
Mm-hmm.
Both Oscar Wilde's.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, I'm thinking of the remake on Ideal Husband.
Oh, yeah, with,
Minnie Driver and...
And Rupert Everett.
Yes.
Yeah.
And Cate Blanchett.
Hmm. Right, Miss Blanchett.
Funny how she keeps popping up in this discussion, huh?
She's everywhere.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny, when you said costume comedy films, the first thing I thought of was Young Frankenstein.
Wow, Mel Brooks going period. That'd be History of the World Part 1, wouldn't it?
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. That's a historical film.
Are we going to bring up Rocky Horror Picture Show next?
No, but Princess Bride, I think.
Princess Bride, definitely, yes.
Ooh, good one, yeah.
And you know, it has the qualifications of being a beautiful movie where the costumes come into place, but they are most definitely dirty as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, it's a very good point. I mean, when you see the grime and the sweat of the era, like, for example, 310 Yuma versus, like, Wyatt Earp, it brings an authenticity to it because it obviously was not quite so cleanly back then. So it's great to see that element of the actors and the characters and the costumes getting mussy and dirty because, you know, there weren't a whole lot of concrete streets back then.
Okay, I know we need to wrap this up. We need to put this to bed. But let me mention an example, an opposite example, I think, which is a picture in which the costumes were everything. That was the intent. That's all we've got. Let's just make it look really cool. And there's nothing else. And the picture fell flat as a result. And that would be The King Arthur from a couple of years ago with Keira Knightley. Where the script is horrendous, holes in it left and right. It's just a bad picture. But hey, look, accurate costume, or you know, look, Roman costumes. That's right for the period. Look, Celtic costumes. It's right for the period. Why don't you love this film? Instead of making a good film, they made a good-looking film.
Hmm. Yeah, and certainly for Keira Knightley's last scene, I think her costume is next to Mila Jovovich in The Fifth Element. Certainly one of the most, she was like one of the most under-costumed ladies in that movie.
Outstanding. I'm a big fan of that.
Okay, I gotta keep coming up
Keira
with
Knightley,
stuff.
Man.
You mentioned Keira Knightley, Pirates. Sure. Pirates of the Caribbean.
Well,
at least
the pirate movies, sure.
At least the first one, because I'm almost at the point where I'd rather not admit the next two exist.
Ooh, yep. You've got the Matrix fever now.
Yes.
I admit, I didn't even see the third pirate picture. I left it alone.
Someone needs to make an edit of 2 and 3 together, and it'd be a good movie. That's just
it
me,
might
though.
Be good. You're right.
Yes. The Phantom edit. I don't know.
My final question for you, can a costume drama be from the future? Would The Fifth Element or a Blade Runner, would those be costume dramas?
I was thinking Firefly for a second, sorry.
A lot of that still applies. The costumes are sort of part of the, you know, they become a character because they convey something organic about the setting.
Yeah, Star Trek is probably the biggest example of that because they all have the standardized uniforms, and you can put down to what quote unquote era.
Yeah,
by the costumes,
definitely.
Things that make you go, All right, this corset is starting to itch. Are we done?
Yeah, we're done. We're done with this. Let's go ahead and talk about what theatrical releases are.
Okay. This week we get Steve Carell and Dane Cook both vying for the attention of Juliette Binoche, who will win in Dan in real life. It's October. It's Halloween, so there must be something better to watch than Saw 4. And in limited release, Anthony Hopkins' What Is It movie of the year, starring Hopkins himself and Christian Slater, Slipstream.
Don't care about any of them.
Yeah,
I refuse to watch more Saw. I'm done.
No. I still have yet to see another one after Saw 1, honestly.
Not missing too much.
No, I've not gone back. I just think the puppet's so funny. I still want there to be a girl puppet. If they do a girl puppet, I will go to Saw 5.
Nice.
You just
Tilly has got to be available, right? Is it Jennifer that does those?
Jennifer Tilly.
She ain't... Bring her in. She can do it again. I still haven't seen any of these, but I feel like I'm missing out because everybody knows about these damn pictures. Do I really need to watch the first one just to say I did?
No.
It's got the best cast. I mean, it's got Cary Elwes and Danny Glover, though.
Cary Elwes overacting horribly at the
end.
In
his worst performance, right. Yes. Danny Glover in his most hammy performance, but still.
If you're not a big gore hound, no, don't even bother.
No, I don't like those pictures, which is why I haven't seen them. But I feel like I'm missing a film revolution here. I haven't seen any of these damn Hostels or Saws or any of those.
Don't go the Hostel route. Ugh.
No, no. There's a reason they call it torture porn. It's like, you know, the Star Wars trilogy, prequel trilogy being CGI porn. You know, it's just it's such an overload of in your face. And
Hostel is the horror genre, what Hudson Hawk is to the action genre. You really don't need to go there.
Okay.
Dang.
Gotcha. Sorry.
No lie. Okay.
So go see something else, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah. You know, Dan, in real life, I got to say, I think it will find its audience because just from the sneak preview that I was in, it was clear that everybody in the audience except me just absolutely loved it. And there are so many things about the movie that do work, especially the performances. Dane Cook is very, very good in this movie, surprisingly. But yeah, for me, I wanted so much more. And I thought it was about as funny as Evan Almighty.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, so I asked you this before, because you look at the trailer, you look at the commercials, you can't help but try to find some correlation to Little Miss Sunshine, especially with Steve Carell being in it.
Yeah.
Is there any kind of, is it like this year's Little Miss Sunshine kind of thing? Or?
It does have that kind of feel. But even more so, I thought it was a bit of a downer of a movie. The movie I would compare it to is The Weatherman, and not in a very favorable way. I thought it was just really very dour and depressing, but also the screenwriting was really like a lot of screenwriting 101 stuff. And, you know, when poor Juliette Binoche has to choose between Steve Carell and Dane Cook, I mean, what kind of world do we live in? Poor girl. Poor Juliette Binoche.
Fair enough.
She's fallen hard from The English Patient that she's in this awful American comedy.
All right. Yeah. Well, let's hit the DVDs. There's got to be something better out there.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. DVD, we got, one of the worst films of the summer, Spider-Man 3. You get the 2-disc special edition or the regular edition. Scrubs Season 6, Twin Peaks, the Gold Box, including the entire series and the pilot, and apparently a log. Well, maybe not, but I think it should come with a log. The entire series of My So-Called Life, Daywatch, no, not Season 2 of Baywatch. Daywatch is Part 2 of Nightwatch, the Russian vampire fantasy trilogy, and you got the Three Stooges collection from 1934 to 1936.
In other words, before the crap with Shem Howard and Joe Howard.
That's right, the golden years.
Cool. Yeah, yeah. Interesting about Daywatch, that it actually is no longer a trilogy.
Oh.
The wrapping really? It up, the American distributors said, nah, you need to wrap this up in one movie, so it's only a two-parter.
Oh my gosh. So, but is there a third movie or
no? No. They said wrap it all up in Daywatch.
So wait, the American distributor had power over the Russian filmmakers?
Apparently they had a lot of money to throw around.
Gosh, that is so perestroika, man.
Yeah, that's messed up.
Gosh.
But the abstract geeks are all about getting Twin Peaks this next week.
Oh, I can't wait. The second season is so hit and miss, but this is brilliant, brilliant TV serialism at its best. Nothing else has ever come close. And the first season, you understand why it was such a phenomenon. It is just, you can't stop watching it. There's never been anything like it. It's thrilling stuff.
Cool.
Cool.
All right, let's hit a little bit of listener mail here. And our first one, oh, look, it's a follow-up from the good Mr. Billy Flynn from the last episode. So let's go ahead and roll that right now.
Dave, Barry, it's Flynn. First off, guys, I wanted to say thank you so much for letting me sit in and sully your show last week. I do appreciate it. But you know, it occurred to me that we were remiss when we talked about DVDs. A DVD got released that we totally missed. The Paul Lynde Halloween Special from 1976, when Paul Lynde stepped out of the center square on Hollywood Squares, got his own special in which two witches summon who, you know, the character that Paul Lynde is for the show. And the two witches were H.R. Puffinstuff's Witchy Poo, Billy Hayes herself, and Margaret Hamilton, reprising her role as the Wicked Witch of the West. It has Tim Conway, Betty White, Billy Barty doing all kinds of various little sketches. And the musical guests? The musical guests were Donnie and Marie and Kiss in their network TV debut. Peter Criss sings Beth while looking at Paul Lynde. How in the hell did we miss this, guys? That is something special right there. Till next time, keep it up, brothers. You're doing a hell of a job, and I'm not just saying that because I was on the show. Although, well, that never hurts. Later.
All right. Cool. Thank you, Mr. Flynn, for the wrap-up, and the follow-up, I should say. And next, we've got a second voicemail from the good, reliable Ethan.
Ethan.
Hey, this is Ethan, giving another kick-ass voicemail. Okay. Obviously, in the geek community, a hot topic right now is the Justice League film. And I say, you know, there's been these casting issues, apparently, you know, who can play Batman, but, you know, but who wants to step on Christian Bale's current legacy? But I say, get none other than Henry Rollins. Yes, Henry Rollins. Imagine him. Can you just perfectly picture him screaming in Frank Miller's epic vision, "I'm the goddamn Batman"? I totally can. Anyway, on to other stuff. What were we talking about? Oh, yes. You're talking your fall preview. This is about episode 15. About Sweeney Todd. And you know what? I also recently saw the original play with the recording with George Hearn and Angela Lansbury. And yeah, it's balls out awesome. But the trailer for this, for the film, kind of crappy. You know, it's not just, you know, it, obviously the poor editing is an issue, and that wouldn't just be the film's fault, but Death singing looks pretty terrible. I'm really worried about this film, but I still have high hopes. And, okay, next. You know, I'm not a regular Geek Label listener, sorry to say, but after listening to Billy the Flynn, I've been converted to the church of Geek Label. Thank you so much. Ethan, out.
Thank you much, Ethan. And Henry Rollins is Batman. You know, he does have a Batman connection. He did a voice of, oh, I forget what the character's name, but he's he essentially likes blowing stuff up in Batman Beyond, go on these political rants and just blow everything up. So he's got, you know, the in almost.
He's probably.
I've never seen that. I didn't know Rollins was in that. That's cool.
I remember hearing it the first time, and Stephanie was like, this guy's really annoying. I'm like, yeah, oh my gosh, it's Henry Rollins. So I had to wait for the credits and make sure, and yep, sure enough.
He's probably the first actor who could be buff enough to play Batman. So no, it's a good suggestion.
It's true, he's got the jawline and he's got the build. That would be kind of cool.
Yeah.
Mr. Rollins, call your agent. Warner Brothers is looking for you.
It's a lot better than who else they could have gotten. Travolta, I don't know. Okay. I think we can go ahead and wrap this bad boy up. If you'd like to shoot us an email, go ahead and hit us over at podcast@screengeeks.com. If you'd like to email us individually, you can hit us at DaveOrBarry@screengeeks.com. Obviously, not like we run their bumper every week or anything, but if you don't listen to Geek Label, follow Ethan's lead.
Join the cult. I mean, the church. Sorry, the church.
Vickers.
They are good people.
They are. Not that you have any affiliation or anything.
That's true. Thank you for having me over, gentlemen.
Hey, Vickers. Yes, thank you very much. My thanks to my lovely wife, Stephanie, for joining us.
Yay, Stephanie. Well.
Thanks, Stephanie.
Bye.
Bye.
And until next week, this is Dave.
And this is Barry.
You're listening to Screen Geeks.
Vicar.
There you go. Screen Geeks, take it easy.